Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
Here we are. Another 4th of July. A chance to not only blow shit up, but to show your support for America. Even as fucked up as America has become, I still love it. The idea of it is just fantastic. A place that was built on an idea. There have been other places like that over the years. The results have been kind of meh. But America, talk about exceeding expectations. Wow. I took my honeymoon in Tahiti. That's quite a place. Being a French territory, most of the tourists there were French. And I dig France and the French. But one day we were at the Hotel Concierge and I was trying to rent a moped. And this guy just stepped in front of me on the line like I wasn't even there. And I said, hey, you know, there's a line here. And I said it nice, friendly. And the guy with this Inspector Clouseau accent says something about
Tahiti is his country's territory and you and your gutter country.
And I've never been Johnny Jingo, but when that Frenchman said that, I had this sudden surge of pride and rage, as if he had just dissed my wife or my family. So I just jumped in front of him, got in his grill and said, fuck you. Well, the place got very quiet, and for a minute there, I thought it might be go time. But the moment just kind of passed. But if wherever you are, and people are listening to this show in over 90 countries, wherever you are, that is your home. And I totally get why the EU is crumbling and people are proud and defensive of their homeland, wherever and whatever it may be. That reflex is kind of hardwired into the species, isn't it? And in the US of A, the 4th of July is the big kahuna. There are other national holidays, but they pale in comparison. When I was a very small kid, like 6 or 7, the old man packed us into the Ford coupe, and we hauled ass down to Washington, D.C. It was 4th of July weekend. I recall stifling heat and humidity. But I was first-generation American on my mom's side, and Dad wanted to see the monuments, and even more, I think he wanted me and my brother to have a look, to at least get a little sense of what this amazing country is all about. And we visited a bunch of monuments. It was really impressive. Even more so at night, with all that white marble lit up against the sky. On the evening of that July 4, we and a lot of other people spread out a picnic blanket on that huge lawn and lay back and watched the greatest fireworks display I have ever seen. Even as a small kid, I had this powerful feeling in my chest that I was a part of something really wonderful, this place, this idea that is America. My mom and my aunts and uncles had told me of the misery of living in Northern Ireland under British rule. And so the notion that a bunch of ragtag guerrilla-style soldiers had kicked the shit out of the British 2 centuries earlier really jazzed me. My fifth grade teacher, Mr. Lynch, a fantastic guy, he described how the British would march shoulder to shoulder across the battlefields while the Yanks were camouflaged in trees and other cover, picking the Brits off in their red coats that practically screamed, "Please kill me." And Mr. Lynch said the Brits regarded the Americans as cowardly for fighting the way we did. There's something wonderful about the American attitude of pragmatism. Just get the fucking job done. Don't stand on ceremony or fight by Marquis de Queensbury rules. Nobody knows more about kicking ass than the United States Marine Corps. And as they say, if you ever find yourself in a fair fight, you have not done your homework. My buddy from high school and college, Jimmy, whom you can learn more about in episode 50, Larry Beats the House, Jimmy had a decent collection of World War II artifacts. I hefted a German dagger he owned. Well, it was bigger than a dagger. It was more like a small sword. The thing was a work of art. The blade was beveled and polished, with a blood groove, and the handle had sterling filigree, and the hilt had silver curlicues, and the scabbard might have been onyx. It was just incredibly ornate. It was way too pretty to stab anyone. As opposed to its American counterpart, that fucking K-bar wasn't much more finished than a prison shank. No doohickeys, no sterling accents. It was made to do one thing: punch through a rib cage and perforate some Fritz's aorta. And then move on to the next guy. Don't even bother to wipe the blade on your khakis. Dead men don't care about hygiene. I read somewhere that the Germans were such nuts for perfection, they were actually painting V-2 rockets. Shit that was built to blow up. When it comes to warfare, America is about efficiency and utilitarian destruction, and fuck the aesthetics. But I digress. 4th of July was, to me, as a kid, the climax of summer. Even though it occurred at the earlier part of it, it was certainly the most important day. Now, my old man was a very law-abiding dude. I don't ever recall him getting even a parking ticket. And fireworks were illegal in New York, yet every 4th, he somehow managed to have quite a cache of Chinese-made bang and boom for the big night. By the time I was 7 or 8, I asked him how he got fireworks, if they were illegal. He answered, "I like them, so I find a way to get them, and so will you." He was right. By the time I was in 7th grade, I was purchasing substantial quantities of fireworks from my own sources. And when I'd bring them home, Dad would smile, just smile. Half the fun was looking at the labels. They were almost as ornate as that German dagger. They had kick-ass names: Black Cat, Super Atomic, as if mere atomic wasn't enough, Thunderbomb, Blackjack, Rocket Brand. Those Chinese were no slouches in marketing or hyperbole. I'll post some images of those fireworks on the show page at thatlarryshow.com. And in a nod to safety, every pack of crackers had a warning: do not hold in hand. That was enough for most people. Larger fireworks instructions got a little more wordy, but not verbose. Place on ground. Light fuse. Get away. That's pretty idiot-proof, isn't it? But what if it was something, some firework so damn big and lethal, without a way to ignite it remotely, you might not get away in time? Well, such was the case with Weeping Jesus Freddy and his magnificent Death Bomb. It's a story listeners have been asking to be retold, and, well, the timing could not be better. Weeping Jesus Freddy was the nickname of a guy who visited a tattoo parlor while very drunk and told the ink man, "Surprise me." When Freddy woke up, his bicep displayed the most gory visage of the Son of God you ever saw. Other characters in the tale include my very pointy girlfriend of the time, Victoria, and, of course, the one, the only, Tony Spumante. Here now is the story of the 4th of July Death Bomb. So Victoria and I had motored out to arrive at the beach house in early afternoon. A little while later, Tony Spumante's stately Lincoln Town Car purrs up, and out steps Tony in his Hawaiian shirt and aviator shades. The sun caught his pinky ring just right, and for a couple of minutes, I was blind in my right eye. Linda, his girlfriend, was resplendent in tube top, hot pants, and heels high enough to trigger a nosebleed. Joey, Tony's bodyguard, was not present, a good sign, indicating Tony felt he was safely in the bosom of his people. "Hey, Slick, what do you got?" says Tony. Tony sometimes called me Slick. I pop the trunk on my Pontiac. Tony whips off his shades for a better look. Inside, I had a fantastic array of pyrotechnics, Dozens of Roman candles, bottle rockets, mats of firecrackers, a gross of M-80s, ash cans, and cherry bombs, and various other rockets and aerial displays. Just as Tony's about to show me the array in his trunk of his Lincoln, Bleeding Jesus Freddy rolls up in his Dodge Charger. It was the same model as the Dukes of Hazzard rig, but without the Confederate flag and Day-Glo paint job. Freddy's was a rich, chocolatey brown. It was a sweet ride.
"Frederick," says Tony, "you should put a tourniquet on that arm. JC is going to bleed out."
On the shotgun seat of Freddy's Dodge was a pointy little cushionette chewing a wad of bazooka gum that could choke a hippo. She blows a bubble about the size of her own head and it pops. She inhales the gum and smiles at us as her French tips tap-tap on the Charger's door. Freddy smiles at Tony and me as he opens the trunk, and inside, the carpet is showroom clean and there's a solitary cardboard box about the size of a toaster oven. With a magician's flourish, Freddy peels back the flaps of the box, and inside is brown wrapping paper in the shape of a squat cylinder. Freddy carefully removes it and unwraps. Inside the brown paper is something about the size of a motel ice bucket. It's acid green, and it's got a fuse sticking out of the top.
"Maron, what the fuck? You starting a war, Freddy?"
I thought I'd seen and set off every type of firework you could buy in the black market, but this was fresh. I halfway expected to see the Acme logo on it. It looked like a prop from those Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons. It was absurd, like a goddamn keg of gunpowder. And the fuse was maybe 5 inches long. How the hell do you light something that short and be far enough away not to get blown up? I asked Freddy where the hell he got it, and he just mimes a zipper on his lips. And Tony says,
"Let me know 10 minutes before you light that fucking thing, Freddy. I intend to be in another zip code."
Freddy carefully puts it back in the box and shuts his trunk. He says it will make a hell of a grand finale. And so the merriment raged. Enough food to end world hunger. Rivers of beer and wine. Sloppy games of volleyball. Water skiing, tubing. Boom boxes the size of refrigerators blasting everything from vintage disco to metal to Sinatra to opera. It was fantastic. But through it all, there was a sense of anticipation. The real fun, the reason we were here, would and could only commence after sundown. Freddy had been flashing his death bomb and everyone was curious. Would he set it off? And if so, how could it possibly be done without loss of life and limb? There was a big grassy area near an old abandoned dock. It was a perfect staging zone for our fireworks display. Everyone set up folding chairs around the perimeter looking across the bay. A few stars began to show themselves in the deep purple sky. The magic hour. Somebody's boombox played patriotic music. All the guys, myself included, emptied our car trunks in a huge pile on the grass. It was a mound of fireworks, probably 5 feet high and the same or more in diameter. Had someone flicked a cigarette button there, it would have been World War III. And so began the display. There was no real order to it, but somehow it was not chaotic. 3 or 4 guys just lighting shit off, most of it directed over the water. Some of the aerial displays were professional caliber, you know, those sunflowers and dandelions and spark showers and whatnot. The ones that make the people ooh and ah. Ever notice how fireworks are dull on TV and in movies? You just have to be there. And when you are, it's not watching from a safe distance with the rest of the sheep, but at ground zero, it's a feeling that's utterly unique. You smell the gunpowder and feel the percussion of the fireworks. It's the greatest. And so after countless mats of fireworks, the boombox played the Star Spangled Banner, and the timing was near perfect. We had reduced that mound of pyrotechnics to a memory, and everyone just looked around because everyone knew there was some unfinished business. The grand finale, Bleeding Jesus Freddy's Death Bomb. Through the darkness, we saw Freddy coming with the death bomb on one palm, like he was carrying a baked Alaska. In his other hand was a long pole. What was that? It was a length of bamboo, maybe 12 feet long. Where had Freddy gotten it? Somebody guessed he had scrounged it from a carpet store. As he approached the crowd, someone shined a flashlight on Freddy, kind of a makeshift spotlight for the main event. A susurrus went through the crowd with various muttered commentaries.
He's fucking crazy.
We're all gonna die.
I'm going home.
Even Tony says, Hey, Slick, maybe we should watch this from my car.
And miss something? I answered.
Okay, you crazy Irish bastard. Don't say I didn't warn you.
Tony planted his feet beside me. The old abandoned dock was jutting out into the bay on uneven pilings. There were many crossboards missing. It looked like an old warped comb with missing teeth. Freddy walked out to the very end and set down the bomb. Then he picks up the bamboo rod and a roll of duct tape. Next, he pulls out a fat cigar and sticks it in his mouth, bites off a hole and spits. Next, a Zippo comes out of his jeans and he lights the cigar. He puffs it until we can see the lit end glow in the dark. By now, the crowd is really getting antsy. Folding chairs are being picked up and moved several yards farther away from Freddy and the doc and his death bomb. Fingers are being jammed into ears. A few wise mothers with infants and toddlers scurry away, far away. Now, only the bold, the curious, and the foolish remain to see Bleeding Jesus Freddy set off what has got to be some military-grade instrument of war. I'm wondering if I should jam my fingers in my ears, maybe at least cover my face and peek out between my fingers. I have no idea, neither does anyone, of the potential power of this ordnance. I look around. The only women remaining are Victoria, Linda, and Freddy Squeeze. All others have wisely left for shelter. Like some greaser Olympian, Freddy raises the pole and lit cigar with one arm and points it skyward. Was he seeking the blessing of the gods or challenging their might with his own? In a few moments, we would know. One thing was certain. He was a fucking madman. And throughout history, madmen command attention. He certainly had ours. Slowly, Freddy turns his back to the crowd and shoulders the pole and takes it in two hands like a rifle, aiming it. He drops to one knee and extends the pole toward the fuse. It's too far to see it clearly, but suddenly, we see those sparks fizzing from the fuse. Freddy drops the pole and spins around and sprints off the dock, his head hunched between his shoulders, arms pumping as he is literally running for his life. People are screaming, Freddy, go, run, run, Freddy, go, go. He gets about halfway across the grass and there was a blinding flash and everyone felt as if they'd been punched. The percussion from the explosion rocked his back and her feet. My hair blew back as if by gale force wind, and then it began to rain. Splinters and water and bits of wood. The dock had been reduced to matchsticks, and it was falling from the sky. Somebody pointed the flashlight at the dock. Not only was it gone, so were the pilings. I heard Tony say, Maron. It took a while for people to process what had just happened. Some guy shouted, Fucking A, Freddy! And then everyone crowded him like he'd just won the heavyweight title to backslap and congratulate him. He was, at that moment, a celebrity, a conquering hero, and well-deserving of all the attaboys he was getting. Freddy smiled, clearly digging the momentary adulation. His pointy squeeze was at his side, claiming him as her man. She popped another huge bubble of bazooka, but after what Freddy had just done, no one could hear it. I walked Tony to his town car. Linda was already inside, checking her lipstick in the vanity mirror.
Well, Slick, that was a show worth seeing. If Freddy wants to top that next year, he's gonna need a fucking nuke. Tony got in the car and fired it up. As usual, there was Sinatra or Tony Bennett on the stereo. Safe home, Tony, I said. Huh? We could have been blown to shit. I ain't worried about the drive. See ya, Slick. And down the road he went, headed back to Queens. As I watched the Lincoln's taillights slip into the night, I smiled to myself. Life was good. Summer had begun with a bang, a big, big bang. Could this be the zenith and the rest of it downhill? Not with my friends. This was just the beginning. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. Come back this weekend for Sinner's Sunday. It's another summertime adventure, JC's All-You-Can-Eat Fish Fry. So bring an appetite and some SPF 30. And if you get a moment, check out a new podcast I just did a guest spot on. And I had a ton of fun there with these guys. What's it called? It's called the Cripple Cast, hosted by Cripple Jesus. You can find it on SoundCloud and Libsyn, and I'll post links on my Twitter page and the show's homepage, thatlarryshow.com. If you like what you just heard, give the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want more and more, like bonus episodes, signed books, custom recordings from moi, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. There are links on the homepage for that, too. And if you want to shoot me an email, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Have yourself a great 4th of July, and take no shit.